It's another tricky issue.
You know, I get why they did this today. What are you actually doing other than just running your mouth?
Time to feel the rush of the round table.
Ryan Doyle, Trevor Mayo with you here on The Rush. A heated conversation throughout, pretty much from 4 o'clock onwards this afternoon. And that is the way we like it, folks. Christy Blatchford is here from The National Post. John Pohl, the host of The Pole Position. And Laura Stone, Queen's Park reporter for The Globe and Mail. Hello, one and all.
Hello.
Hello.
It's great to have you. Let's just, you know, I've got stories all in different orders here today. But let's talk about the conversation this city is having today and the lack of conversation, it would seem, from the Prime Minister's office when it comes to guns, gangs, and drugs. We had a conversation with Mayor John Tory just a few minutes ago. This is what he said about today's meeting.
So I would just say to you that the one thing that we did do that is very immediate and very urgent, and we pulled that money together in 3 days, is exactly that. And I think that's the most urgent thing we can do, with lots of work to be done on the laws like bail, sentencing, gun laws, and lots of work to be done on investing in neighborhoods.
Christy is, of course, talking about the $4.5 million that the three levels of government came together on for Toronto Police to tackle gun crime. What do you think about the Prime Minister's conversation after the meeting today?
I agree with one of your callers, one of your last callers, I think. It's a campaign. That's what it is. It just, they haven't dropped the writ yet. So I'm suspicious of it. I don't like promises made in the heat of a campaign. They're almost never kept. And this is never going to be solved just by money for the cops. So the cops need money and more tools. I'm all in agreement with that. And right now probably would be a good time to have a lot of police in the streets. But I think it was Trevor who said, there are an awful lot of other things that need to be done. And that is not a new, none of this is a new conversation. I'm old, so I remember 10 years ago and 20 years ago having the same conversation. You know what? Nothing significant has changed in those needy neighborhoods. Not a goddamn thing.
Yeah, Laura, that's the frustrating part. And then you have a prime minister out there today talking about Doug Ford this and Doug Ford that. And that comes across as, you know, the election campaign part of it, as opposed to the governing and leadership part of things.
Yeah, it's clear from Prime Minister Trudeau's visit to the Toronto area over these past 2 days that he's kicking off his election campaign, and he's testing the lines, which are trying to link Doug Ford with other conservative politicians across the country, i.e. Andrew Scheer, who's the actual federal leader running for the prime ministership. You would be mistaken if you listened to Justin Trudeau today, because you'd think it was Doug Ford who's running against him. Look, I don't think, you know, from your interview with John Tory, I don't think the mayor was expecting, you know, a grand proposal, everything to be laid out coming out from this meeting. But, it's clear that the prime minister held his cards close to his chest today. He did not want to commit to anything, whether it's going to be some sort of handgun ban, either in the city of Toronto or allow cities across the country to decide on this. And he is saving himself for the election campaign because he doesn't want to play his cards too early.
John, to you, does that suggest that he's not getting the room right, that he's not getting the temperature of the room right when it comes to this issue?
I just have a feeling, and I've said it before, that I'm not really sold that the staff that help the prime minister are helping the prime minister. I just feel sometimes he's set up to us having conversations like this, not feeling that his appearance was genuine. It was always political based, and it just seems like they don't arm him with the right information that he comes out as a winner in these sorts of situations. I don't think these problems we're talking about, and as Christy said, they're not new. Are they the fault of any one political party? Probably not. I don't know if we went back in time and we figured out why our neighborhoods like they are. I don't think we would blame a political party. But the thing that struck me
I blame politics. Not
well,
the
it's not getting
party,
things
but
done.
I blame
yeah,
politics.
Exactly. Correct. The thing that struck me the most is we're sitting here talking about $4.5 million, and I don't know a lot about how to solve these sorts of problems, but that doesn't seem to be like a lot of money at all. It just, that to me is the number that screams like, oh, we're just putting up a number that the average person will go, that's a lot of money, but to solve this problem, it's peanuts.
All right, let's talk a little bit, although I wish I didn't have to, about Adam Vaughn. He is a liberal.
I wish you didn't have to, too.
I know. Sometimes the job just gets the better of me, Christy. He tweeted today about refugee children. He was responding to a question that was asked to provincial MPP Todd Smith about the economic impact of refugees to this country. Adam Vaughn tweeted out that the Conservatives tried to take away health care for the children of refugees. Now they are trying to blame school cuts on these children. All children need care and should be in school. We all know where right-wing scapegoating leads us. Our government won't cage children. And then he has a lovely picture of children who, of course, are in a detainment area of Texas on the United States-Mexico border. He was interviewed by Jim Richards on the national show this afternoon. Here's what he had to say for himself.
It's a very small group of people. It's about a quarter of a percent of the total student body. But for the Ford government to suddenly say our education department is in shambles right now because of these refugee kids, when they know the reason that the schools are in trouble right now are because of conservative cuts to education.
He would not take any responsibility, Christy, for the picture itself.
And what a surprise.
Yeah. What do you make of it?
There is no bar beneath which Adam Vaughn will not slither. That's what I make of it. Wow. I think it was...
Your
sorry.
BS alarm is going off. That's the Adam Vaughn sound.
That's right. It is. I'm disappointed but unsurprised.
Laura, it's interesting because Adam used to be a journalist. Do you think if you're linking facts to a particular picture, that's important? As a politician, he doesn't want to seem to follow that suit.
No, social media in an election time, social media for politicians, this is often a cautionary tale, especially when you have a bit of an outrageous personality. We've seen Adam Vaughn have to apologize before for suggesting that people whack Premier Doug Ford. When I was reporting in Ottawa, he was accused by a Conservative MP of elder abuse for allegedly confronting her on a bus. This is someone who runs hot. Mm-hmm. And when you have your keyboard at your disposal and you're just typing things away, this could come back to haunt you. And I'm not just singling out Adam Vaughn, although he does
have to do this a lot. It's quite the resume you just listed, though.
I did my research.
Yeah.
This is where you have to be careful in this day and age to, one bad tweet or one faulty statement and you could be out.
Although, John, it does seem like this particular MP gets a lot of rope from the top and from his bosses.
It's really weird to me because we have two rules for social media. There are those of us who have common sense. We understand how it works. We understand how everyone, whether it's movie stars or politicians, use that medium to their advantage. And then there's another side of the population that just consumes it and they don't ever care about facts. And I think some people, and maybe Adam Vaughn is one of them, understands that social media facts are not important, but stoking the fire is, because that's what actually gets the conversation going. And even if people are mad at you, somehow that actually ends up being a good thing in the social media world. I don't know how we solve that problem, because it seems that more and more politicians
muzzles
are doing this. maybe gloves so they can't tweet. I don't know
shackles.
What it is. But it is a problem because, again, facts are important, and I think it's a bad thing that some of our politicians are not, they don't care about facts anymore. They care about stoking the fire and getting the outrage meter going, which unfortunately works.
My challenge with this was, again, I don't take fault with the sentiment of what he's trying to push through in the language that he's using. My bigger issue is on the photo. We're talking about children in schools in Ontario and that being an overburden and whatever, blah, 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 that the government was going on about. And then all of a sudden we jump to the detention centers on the U.S. border where children are being separated from their parents and are being caged. And so that to me was a pretty dramatic jump. And so that's what that photo does. And so, again, I think it's an important conversation to have in terms of actually pushing back against the provincial government in terms of what the narrative they're trying to put out there. But the photo, to me, was just over top.
Yeah, which is the bigger political crime, scapegoating or fear-mongering? We're not really sure at this point. Should the government be subsidizing internet costs for low-income families? Acorn Canada coming out with a report today saying Canadians need online access to do all sorts of things, apply for jobs, complete schoolwork, download government forms. Christy, is that something that should be on the docket and conversation when it comes to the federal election?
Yeah, and, it's part of exactly the same question we were discussing off the top. The disadvantages that kids from poor families, needy families have. First of all, they probably don't have internet. If they do, they don't have a quiet, safe place to do their homework or their whatever. They don't have anybody who helps them. It goes back to what Trevor says about mentors and investing in kids. It's going to be a lot more expensive than $4.5 million if you're even going to make a dint on saving this next generation, because by my reckoning, we're now in the third generation of disadvantaged kids who are totally screwed from the get-go, and having access to computers and online forms and all of the things you have to do to live in the modern world is just one of the many things stacked against them.
Laura, I'm okay if we're talking about creating community centers that have this type of access. I'm a little bit leery if we're talking about subsidizing people's personal internet access, because it's not always going to be used for the things that are listed that are all admirable things.
I do think this issue resonates, though, as a broader issue, you know, when we're talking about low-income families, but also for those, you know, quote-unquote middle-class voters as well. The issue of affordability is going to be huge in this next federal election. I would expect all federal parties are going to come out with some sort of plan to address the internet access. And we always see governments come out about mm-hmm. rural internet access. And so I do think that I do agree with Christy in that, you know, this is something that all families do need. It's part of the modern age, but I think it taps into that issue of affordability that people feel like they can't get ahead. Things are so expensive these days.
John Paul?
I think this is maybe not as much of an internet problem as it is an awareness problem. The fact is, we have many arenas that have free Wi-Fi. We have many libraries that have free computers and free Wi-Fi. So we've been investing in this. I just don't know that we're connecting the dots. And I don't know that we need to subsidize somebody's bill. But I think if we just tell people, hey, we have all this stuff, it's available, go use it, not to mention schools, I think that's where the problem's got to start, is getting the people that need it to know that it's already available to them. And then we move to the next shiny level as we can.
And I will point out, John says that it, not being a downtown big city guy, he doesn't live in the city. So that's, you know, it's important to note that, because that point was brought up earlier. Coca-Cola is putting Dasani water in cans amid backlash against plastic. A very quick comment on this. Christy, will this put you off a little bit? I understand we all have to do it. I understand that this is a good way to go. But water in cans seems weird to me.
Yeah, it just does because it's new. It'll seem less weird the next day, and after 2 days, it'll be absolutely normal.
Laura?
You know, this might out me as a downtown Toronto elite, but I already drink my Perrier in slim cans,
oh,
so
geez.
I'm good.
There you go. See, you're right. I forgot about
it's
that.
It's different for me. The fizzy stuff is a little different.
I love fizzy water.
John?
You know what? I'm with you, Ryan. The thought of a bottled water in a can, like a soda can, that doesn't work for me. But then someone said, what if it was in one of those beer cans, like where it's almost like a beer bottle, but it's
the
a can.
The aluminum ones, yeah.
That I would drink water from. For some reason, I don't know why that makes more sense to me, because it's the same thing.
I'm with you.
But out of a can, I can't. But make it look like a bottle, I will.
John, Laura, Christy, thank you all.
Thank you.
Yes, I do.